Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, in January 2013, our next guest sat in prison contemplating suicide. Later he went and attended an in-house prison Bible study group and specifically asked God, if he existed, to send him a white dove. To his amazement, the next morning outside his cell, a group of pigeons rose and flew away and a white dove came to take their place. From that day, he gave his life to Christ and his life has been completely transformed. He has now gone on to work as a fitness coach, a youth worker, an assistant chaplain to a rugby team and has preached to prisoners. On the line now to share with us about his life and his new book release, Taming of a Villain, A Message of Hope, we have Alan Langham. You are very welcome to the show, Alan.
Hi, good morning, Ronan. How are you doing?
Good, good. First of all, Alan, an extract from your book says you were a hurting boy trapped in an 18-stone, steroid-filled, violent man's body. You were depressed, a drug addict, but that God came into your prison cell and pulled you out of your darkness and pain. Can you take us back to your youth? What was early life like for you?
Yeah, so it was very traumatic. I grew up with a lot of bullying from local people in the estate. I was sexually abused as a child. And I also got quite a lot of chastisement within the house. So we're very mixed up. But there was also, my dad had left when I was just a small baby. He'd literally stepped over me as a child and left the family home. So I grew up very mixed up, very, very frightened and scared of the people around me that were supposed to love me as much as they should have done.
It always amazes me how many people who get involved in addiction and various other kinds of violent behaviours and stuff, how there is trauma in early life.
Yes.
And you
definitely.
Had. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So that, I think that was the most significant part of my life was, you know, experiencing that trauma, going through those traumatic things. And then the biggest trauma for me was when I found my mum. She'd sadly passed away when I was 14. I was awoken with the squeals of my sister who opened the living room door, and I went into the living room, placed my hand on her neck. It was the coldest feeling I'd ever felt, and she died of a cerebral hemorrhage. So that I used that really as a catalyst and as an excuse for the next kind of 20 plus years of negative behaviours, and I blamed everything and everything on my mum's death.
Yeah.
Other than some of the choices that I were making. But that early trauma then at that day, a rage built up inside of me, and that was the problem. Up to that point of 14 years old, I'd always been what I would say, I was a victim.
Yeah.
I allowed people to do whatever they wanted to do because, you know, I had no defences. And then as from that age onwards, I decided to train, you know, my body with weights and also to start boxing and fighting and started hitting back. But what I realised at that age is that when I hit back, people were frightened of me, and it kind of gave me a false sense of power.
Yes, of course.
I kind of thrived on that and started to, you know, started to dish out a lot more. So by the time I hit 16, you know, I had a big reputation as a young up and coming fighter, a street fighter. But also I played the game of rugby league as well. So the rugby league, the fighting, you know, a kind of man's man going around the pubs. We are wrestling and fighting and gambling. I thought that what it was to be a man. So I was so far away from anything to do with God or faith at that time.
And as you increase in the aggression and the violence and the, you know, kind of trying to feel powerful, I suppose, really is what you're trying to do. Did you feel yourself kind of losing yourself in a way, getting further and further away of who you truly were yourself?
Definitely. I was always, you know, a very kind-hearted, loving boy, desperately wanting the love. And I was filled with love around the house. It was very, you know, contradictory. I want anybody to think that there wasn't love in our house. It was just mixed, you know, because it was mixed with violence and mixed with, you know, with people, other people's issues who were at the end, towards the end of their lives, who just gave up on life. So, you know, there was a lot of mixed kind of messages within that, and also everybody felt I needed to be toughened up because I didn't have a dad.
Yeah. I can understand, you know, that you were a successful rugby player as a teenager and you were boxing and you're doing these things. But, you know, all of those things, I suppose, are, they're games with rules, I suppose. How did you end up in prison?
Because all I ever saw all my life was family or to be wanted and to be accepted. So when my mum died, my family become my friends become my family. So there was a group of us who all hung around together who had all gone through something. Some, you know, my best friend at the time, his dad had left. My other friend's parents had split up. Other people had passed away, or some was in foster homes or care homes. And we all just quieted together and were like a little kind of firm, as it were. And then what happened is I was so protective of them that every time when we started going out in the town centre and things like that, and we started getting into, you know, trouble used to come towards us every time I went out, I was always defending them. And on one occasion, I'd headbutted somebody in the local nightclub. And at a time when I was a professional rugby player, I had a contract. I was sober, you know, going out with them and driving them in my car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and but that and a few other incidents all collectively together got me my first sentence. So I walked into prison at 18 years old, a professional rugby player, just lost my contract, full of, you know, full of myself, thought I was a tough, hard kid. And those being in prison then learnt me a massive lesson that I had to toughen up even further. So I went from kind of a Jack the Lad, kind of lovable rogue character to having to become very hardened. And in a short space of time, I had a couple of short sentences. And then I suppose I started to see that family kind of within the prison environment as well, Ronan, and that.
Sure.
Then obviously I had to like lower my standards, as it were, from what I'd been taught as a young person growing up. You know, my mum was very strong-willed about doing things right and correct. My family wasn't, none of them had ever been in trouble at all. I was the only one who ever brought any trouble on the family. And then what happened then is that I got a long sentence off the back of being on heroin. And I got introduced to heroin within the prison at 18, 19 years old. I came out from prison, no contract from the rugby, a bit of disgrace because I've been to prison, give up on myself, and actually then started to take heroin regularly, and then became an addict within space of a few months, and then decided to take off down to London to try and escape, you know, I think what is called in the book is heroin hell, you know, chapter explains my whole journey through, you know, living on the streets, being approached by, you know, men in the streets, and then those doing, you know, abusing me as an older person, you know, and it just horrendous time, and I just fell so far, so low.
It sounds like a horror story, Alan. It really does. It's awful.
It really was.
And tell us your this event that I described about, you know, asking God, you know, to send him your white dove. What? How did you end up in a prison Bible study group?
Right. So you know, from heroin up until coming to Christ, there was nearly a 20-year gap.
Right.
And within that 20 years, I was a revolving door of prisons, courts, in the community, drug dealing. I became, you know, I got clean from heroin when I was 20. You know, from the age of 20 to 35, the next 15 years, I became, I suppose, what you would call an enforcer.
Right.
And I wanted to rid myself of that heroin-type image, and what, you know, they used to call me a smackhead and stuff like that. So I said, right, so I trained myself to a huge size, shaved my hair off, and became extremely violent. Again, it wasn't me. I was so far on from what I really was, but I just used violence and intimidation as a daily thing. But that lifestyle over those years started to take a real severe effect on my mental health. And the amount of drugs that I used to take as well as sell, you know, I'd take anything that was going other than heroin.
Yes.
You know, I'd just replace that. I used to drink a lot, you know, smoke a lot of cannabis, take cocaine, party lifestyle, go on 3 and 4, 5, 6 day benders, drinking. And that lifestyle, then in prison, out of prison, it took its effect on me.
Of course.
But also, when I was in the prison system, I was also always searching for the who am I? Why am I here? What's the purpose of my life? I didn't feel I had any purpose. I was a broken man, a lost man. I had 3 children I didn't really, wasn't a good father to. I'd alienated my family. I'd pushed anybody close to me away. And I was just lost and alone. And I was a scared little boy trapped in that body, as I said to you.
Absolutely.
And I went down to the chapel just off of love that these guys shown them. The prison ministry team came in and put a put a green card in my hand with the praying hands and said, come down to the chapel.
Wow.
I went down to the chapel, but I just started to go there regularly. And I got released. from the prison, and they'd invited me to go to the church when I was in there, but I didn't feel worthy to go, and I didn't feel like I could go.
Yeah.
So when I went back to prison the next time, within a few months, for the same scenario, I went straight down to the chapel. I broke down, I cried to the guys, they give me a hug and explained to me, you know, this is the consequence, I'm not living right, and they prayed, and they invited me back down on the Thursday, this was the Tuesday. I went back down on the Thursday, and we prayed what I would call now the Father's Prayer, which was about absent fathers in our lives,
right,
and us being fathers to our children. And the presence of God really penetrated that room. I left that room so convicted with my own sin that I knew I had to repent and turn away from the life that I'd led.
Wow.
But I didn't know how, but mentally I'd convinced myself the only way out would be suicide. So I dropped to my knees in that prison cell, crying like a baby, and just said between me and God, if you're real, if you're hearing my prayers, put a white bird outside my window in the place of the pigeons. And the next morning when I woke up, the pigeons lifted up, the dove sat down, and I made a decision to follow Jesus that day. And he has transformed my life since then. And all that horror story has now turned into a beautiful love story, the love of God radiating through my life.
Gosh,
consistently. The restoration of my family, being restored with my children, my father's now in my life. And he's actually an Irish man, but you know, he's from Enniscorthy.
Yeah.
He's back over in the UK now. And such a... You know, obviously there's trials and tribulations and the ups and downs and the roller coasters, as I've explained in my book. But it's just what he's done over these last 7 years is an absolute miracle.
Yeah,
and
it's
anybody who was so far away from God can always come to God, because that's what his grace is for.
Well, I tell you, Alan, it's an absolutely extraordinary book, Taming of a Villain, A Message of Hope. It's available now on www.lionhudson.com or through Amazon. I'm going to give that name again, Taming of a Villain, A Message of Hope. Alan Langham, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
God bless you, Ronan. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.